We are back better than ever, ready to kick off episode 155 of The Far Middle. Not the far left, not the far right. No, in that place that today has become the field of the few and the brave and the free thinkers. The middle is in the far middle. Nick DeOlius here is your host, and I'm always thrilled to be so. As our session starts and kicks off, let's pay our respects to Holocaust Remembrance Day, which was a couple of days prior to the release date for episode 155. Now, this wasn't the first genocide that human history has encountered, and it won't be the last genocide, unfortunately. But all those affected victims of that atrocity deserve the respect that remembrance elevates. The ability and degree of humans to harm other humans, it's one of those attributes that make us unique in the animal kingdom, badly unique. For those constant listeners who know our standard format, we start with a sports dedication with each episode. This one has been on my mind for a while that we're going to dedicate today, and I was looking for a good episode to slot it into that would fit into our line of connections and dots. That's with Dr. James Burke, the creator and host of Connections, who we mimic with our connections flow each episode. That's what he'd want to see, right? Now, our theme for this episode is going to be a walk through the hard-to-believe but true nightmare that has become California. That's a topic that we've discussed in past episodes, but it is one that needs an update and a refresh because, unbelievably, things have degraded to a far worse situation than last time we dove deep. And we will center our connections on the Bay Area of California. So San Francisco, Oakland, that region of the state. Insanity and verge of collapse, they seem to be the best descriptors of what is going on there currently. You'll see in a minute how our dedication this week starts our connections rolling. And the dedication subject is a school, not a college, but a high school, out in the Bay Area of San Francisco, Junipero Serra Catholic High School. So there are many high schools across America that can lay claim to famous alumni who made history in the sports world. But consider what Serra can tout, and think of another high school that has anything close to the same pedigree. Let's start with a famous coach, Mr. John Robinson, best known for his two stints as head coach of the USC Trojans football team and for his tenure as head coach in the NFL with the LA Rams between those two USC stints. And Robinson's Southern Cal teams won four Rose Bowls, and they captured a share of the national championship in the 1978 season. Robinson is one of the few college football head coaches to have non-consecutive tenure at the same school, and he is a College Football Hall of Famer. Serra's alumni also excelled in coaching and managing in Major League Baseball, because Jim Fregosi is an alumnus. Now, Robinson and Fregosi are a nice sort of pair of impressive. But now it gets crazy impressive with three people from Serra that came after those two. Two being Super Bowl MVPs, one being an all-time home run king, one in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, one who will soon be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and one who should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame based on statistics, but is on the outside looking in due to steroid controversy. Now, who are they? You might have already guessed some of these three. First, Lynn Swann. Swan went to Serra, and perhaps one of the greatest highlight reels for a single Super Bowl ever with his acrobatic catches against Dallas during the Steelers' dynastic run, Hall of Famer. Tom Brady, he attended Serra for high school, who many consider, of course, the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. Brady's got more rings than fingers, it seems. And then there's Barry Bonds, who also attended Serra when his pro baseball star father, Bobby, was playing for the Giants. And do you know who Barry Bonds' godfather is? It's Willie Mays. And do you know who a distant cousin of Barry and Bobby Bonds is? Reggie Jackson. Now, that's an unbelievable lineup of athletic alumni. Home run king, greatest QB ever, acrobat Hall of Famer, Rose Bowl coaching master. Yes, episode 155 is dedicated to whatever is in the water out there in Northern California and at Junipero Serra High School. What a legendary roster. Let's jump from the athletic legacy of Serra High School in the Bay Area to the ranking of San Francisco when it comes to the healthiest cities in the United States. I came across a story, actually a slew of stories, as the result of a study by an outfit were published recently in early April, where a firm ranked the healthiest cities in the United States. And surprisingly, San Francisco came in at number one. Now, why was that surprising? Well, it's been well documented that San Francisco and the Bay Area, they have seen much better days than what they are experiencing today, particularly when it comes to the quality of life of residents. Crime's a major issue, homelessness is out of control, the streets are filthy and littered with everything from trash to used needles to human feces to urine, and walking a block in San Francisco can be a hazardous endeavor these days, which is perhaps the biggest reason why San Francisco is experiencing an exodus of people who are looking for a tolerable level of quality of life. But that's not the way this study saw it. It warranted to objectively and quantitatively weight rank each city under key metrics, over 40 in total, that included healthcare, food, physical activity or fitness, and green spaces. Now, I didn't delve too deeply into the specific definitions of these categories. For example, it would be interesting to see what is considered when scoring on food or green spaces. But suffice to say, San Francisco's overall number one ranking was driven largely by its food and green spaces rankings coming in at number one overall. In fact, three California cities, San Francisco leading the way, and then San Diego and Irvine, they made the top 10 of healthiest cities in America in this study. And the study says being healthy equates to things like saving money and building wealth. So here is a quote from the healthiest city study that most of the news outlets picked up on. Quote, staying healthy is a personal responsibility, and everyone should strive to eat nutritious food, exercise regularly, and look after their mental health. However, where people can live can have a big influence on how successful they are at staying in good health. So the best cities are the ones that provide the greatest access to high-quality healthcare, green spaces, recreation centers, and healthy food. Now, this was from an analyst that basically drove the study. The analyst or expert went on with, San Francisco is the healthiest city in America, in part because it has the lowest share of obese adults in the country at just 19% of the population. San Franciscans eat well and have good opportunities for exercise too. San Francisco has the second lowest share of people who eat less than one serving of fruits or vegetables per day, and 100% of the population lives reasonably close to a location where they can do some sort of physical activity. Now, all of that sounds great, and much of it is true in a vacuum. Yes, eating more vegetables and fruits will be good for the individual, both from a health as well as a financial perspective. And access to healthcare and the quality levels of that healthcare, that's another positive attribute for individuals and when it comes to their health and wealth. And exercising and having access to places to exercise, once again, big benefit to the individual, whether it be their blood pressure or their net worth. However, this thing we call life, it's not lived in a vacuum. It's the real world out there. In San Francisco these days, it is not the epitome of healthy. As I said, a quick stroll around town will tell just about anyone that that's the case. And substance abuse is everywhere, and that's not healthy nor profitable for the user. Having green spaces close by, that's great until you realize you're taking your personal safety at risk by simply walking to the park or exercising in the park. And it's great that the saturated fat intake is low and that the consumption of fruits that are high in fiber are high. But what difference does that make to the health of the individual if they're picking up some sort of airborne disease due to the toxic waste that's found on just about every street corner and patch of grass in San Francisco? It's weird to see a supposed objective study that's ranking San Francisco at the top, number one, out of all U.S. cities when it comes to being the healthiest. Yet everyone knows that living and functioning in San Francisco these days can be quite the threat and danger to one's health, both physical and mental. Just had to share that study with you, constant listeners. If you're looking for another data point on the declining quality of life in the Bay Area, let's make a connection by taking the short trip across the Bay from San Francisco into Oakland, which in many ways is facing more headwinds than even San Francisco. There's an interesting and a very troubling trend or development that's been occurring for a period of time in Oakland, and that I think has reached a significant milestone, sort of a breaking point indicator as to how far livability in places like Oakland have declined. a well-known fast food chain announced it's closing multiple locations in Oakland, specifically the dining rooms, because of safety concerns in the Oakland area, which has been struggling with rising crime affecting businesses both big and small. The fast food chain said in a statement that, quote, providing a safe environment for team members and customers is the priority, end quote. But a fear or concern for safety of the employee and customers, it's driving more restaurant and fast food location closings. The decision wasn't made without attempts to avoid the outcome of closing. Another quote from the fast food chain home office said, the franchise owner and operator has informed us that they are consistently evaluating and working to ensure a safe environment by implementing procedures such as closing dining rooms and hiring security guards, and they have taken extra measures to meet with local law enforcement. Yeah, at least four locations of this chain in Oakland have closed their dining rooms, but the drive-throughs do remain operational. And one location has been robbed four times in the past 4 months, which is shocking. And it now posts signs notifying customers of the closure. The restaurant recently had plywood on the windows from its most recent robbery when robbers drove a truck through the window to steal a safe. Another Oakland location still has their dining room open, but has gone cashless to discourage robberies, if you can believe that. And frequent auto theft and property damage have been problems for stores operating in the area beyond the store robberies. Here's another quote from a local. They just pull up out of nowhere, and it's not like they only rob the store. They rob everybody in there as well. So it's not as safe as it used to be. There's a lot of crime now. That was the quote from a local resident. Yes, it is indeed a mess. And it's leading to growing problems with fast food location after location closing up shop and saying enough is enough. Another famous fast food chain is set to close its Oakland location, and this would be the first time ever that this iconic chain permanently closed the location. It said the crime was the reason. Another iconic national name in restaurants recently closed its only location in Oakland after more than 54 years there, citing public safety concerns. As I said, it's an exodus and a mess, and it hurts the residents of Oakland the most. But that's what high crime and safety concerns will do. And crime has been a major issue in Oakland. Robberies grew 38% last year, according to the police data. Burglaries are up 23%, and motor vehicle theft jumped 44%. That's unbelievable. Roughly one of every 30 Oakland residents had a car stolen last year. Unbelievable. Now, what does the left in California leadership attribute the rising crime and safety problems to? Well, they're blaming COVID. So check out this quote from a media-recognized expert. Pandemic-related changes in people's daily activities and emotional and economic stress levels, changes in police practices and a rupture of public trust in law enforcement, and the suspension or reduction of social supports and programs are among the theories offered by crime scholars. Yeah, I'm not sure that those are the root causes or the root cause of why more fast food joints are being robbed and vandalized. And a local politician had an even different take as to why the fast food places that were closing up shop wasn't due to crime, and it wasn't a problem. It was good news, because that politician said that it was a sign that locally owned restaurants are doing well. They're basically pushing out the business of the fast food chains. Talk about denial. I can't even imagine how difficult it is for an independent proprietor to successfully run a restaurant or make ends meet these days in Oakland. It's got to be damn near impossible. And last month, California Governor Newsom deployed 120 California Highway Patrol officers to Oakland and the surrounding area to conduct a law enforcement surge operation. The aim is to crack down on crime, including vehicle theft and retail theft and violent crime. So we'll see how that plays out and how it goes. Very similar, by the way, to what New York City was doing with the National Guard in its subways to prevent violent crime. We discussed that a few weeks ago in a prior episode. While crime is raging against residents in the Bay Area, and the restaurant business is being eradicated left and right in Oakland, from the largest national chains to the small mom-and-pop eateries, you might be wondering what the leadership of Oakland is focused on these days. And the answer is covered in our next connection, and it's going to potentially infuriate you, I'm warning you, because where city officials have chosen to come down hard on, has made national news for good reason. In the you can't make this up category, which has been, by the way, an unofficial Far Middle feature the past 3 years, Oakland officials are going after a 102-year-old wheelchair-bound man after he was unable to remove graffiti painted all over his home. Now, the city was threatening to fine him thousands of dollars if the graffiti was not painted over. And of course, the 102-year-old wheelchair-bound man didn't tag his own property. It was vandalized with the graffiti by somebody else. And his name is Mr. Silva. He was facing warnings of an $1,100 fine that went along with the warnings if he didn't clean up the graffiti that vandals repeatedly covered his house with. Now, this is what happens when the left runs society and government. The absurd becomes normal. So now Mr. Silva, who's paid taxes in Oakland for over 80 years, this is the thanks that he gets. He's facing threats of an $1,100 fine from the city of Oakland for graffiti. Violation citation demanded that the paint be removed in a few days, and worse yet, an additional fine would be added for each failed inspection in the future. Nice. Mr. Silva's daughter-in-law, she was pretty upset. She said, "It's so absurd. It's like a joke. If you drive around the city and see the graffiti everywhere, it's just, I don't know what to say." Yeah, I don't know what to say either. This isn't his first ordeal with graffiti, by the way. In his younger years, Mr. Silva painted over the graffiti time and time again. He was a contractor and would paint over it, but now he's in a wheelchair and he's going to be 103 years old. Check out this quote from my new hero. "I'll be 103 in 2 months or so. That slowed it up a little bit, you know." So Mr. Silva, he ended up asking his 70-year-old son to help paint over the graffiti. And his son said, "It's hard to keep up with it because as soon as we get it painted, it's going to be graffitied on again and it won't last." The Silva family, they own a small commercial business in Oakland. It's been broken into 3 times in the last year, just like the restaurants we covered in the prior connection. During one break-in, the younger 70-year-old Silva caught a person inside the shop. He called 911 and was promptly put on hold. Silva Jr. equipped, "So it's hard to understand where our tax dollars are going. They can't answer 911, but they can come out and hassle you about a fence. Oakland has to change. The system is not working." Right on, Mr. Silva. By the way, consider that just up the road from the Silva's home, a large utility box is also covered in 6 different kinds of graffiti. The utility box has no owner except the city to be threatened with charges. What is a classic, of course, hallmark of the left and unaccountable government, that being rules for thee, but not for me. A textbook case right there in play in Oakland. Well, maybe we're being a little too tough on the Bay Area. So let's jump to our next connection where we try to give an opportunity for the Bay Area to redeem itself, as in maybe the reason the plummeting quality of life and crime surge problems are present is that the leaders of the Bay Area, they're focused and spending all their time on making sure kids in the Bay Area school districts are being educated. Well, I've got some bad news, constant listeners, because that's far from the case. Allow me to illustrate with an example. There's an elementary school in the Bay Area that spent $250,000 in federal aid that was supposed to go toward boosting student math and reading scores, and that instead, this money was spent on a program that was tagged as woke kindergarten. Now, the program had a website, and the website defines the program as a global abolitionist early childhood ecosystem and visionary creative portal. I have no idea what that means. The program teaches slogans. Eradicate Borders is one of the favorites. And the program refers to students as comrades. And it presents a word of the day. And an example of a word of a day would be abolish. Now, I assure you, I'm not making this up. It's happened. It's happening. And with your tax dollars, mind you. You might find it shocking, but the program didn't end up helping students score better on math and reading tests. In fact, after 2 years of the program, testing scores declined. I know, that's shocking. The Bay Area Elementary School eventually came to its senses and discontinued the program after a couple of years. But the program lives on because teachers at a Brooklyn, New York elementary school, they've taken up the program to teach third graders. Wow. And to put this travesty in perspective, consider that the overall Oakland Unified School District's test results for 2023 showed only a third of students met or exceeded the state standard in English, which means 2 out of 3 students did not. In math for 2023, only 1 out of 4, 25% of students met or exceeded the state standard, with 3 out of 4 not meeting it. That's outrageous, it's unacceptable, and it's a tragedy. And down the stretch we come to wrap up episode 155. I am in a melancholy mood, to be honest. I have great affection for California, gone on record many times in prior episodes laying that out. It's one of those few places that I would ever consider living in besides Western Pennsylvania. And I've got immediate family living out there as well as business relationships. Yes, the potential of California, it's always been to serve as the ideal for the rest of us. It used to epitomize so much of the positive of the American dream. But today, the reality of California is the truth of what happens when the left runs things and what it will bring to all of us eventually. And now California has degenerated into the poster child of the looming American nightmare. Anyone can see it, and everybody does. That got me thinking on the topic of this final connection. As you know, I usually wrap up episodes with a musical or art or literary or cinematic note. California has been a cultural center of gravity in those arenas for decades. Now, what would some of my heroes think of the California of today? Let's start with John Steinbeck, who came up in the Monterey Peninsula area just south of the Bay Area. The guy who wrote of the quintessential California experience with his literary classic, East of Eden. And also, by the way, Steinbeck, he was a bit left-leaning. How would he feel about what he would see today in California? Heck, just outside his museum doors, which I've been to. Would it change his political or ideological persuasions? I think that it would. And I've always been an avid reader of Joan Didion, who in many ways was the voice of her generation when it came to all things California. If she appeared back on the scene today, I've got to think her essays would have a distinctively different vibe to them. On the music scene, there's more questions to ponder. Could the Mamas and Papas pen the hit California Dreaming today and not have listeners think it'd be a parody? Would the Beach Boys, their colorful image and creation of California as young, innocent in the future, would that be ridiculed as clueless if it were attempted today? How about that song by Scott McKenzie, the one-hit wonder, San Francisco? That was the hippies theme song from the 60s, where he sang, "If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair." What would he write today? Be sure to have a gun in your hand? Or be sure to not park your car on the street? Or be sure to watch where you step? The only legitimately positive renditions of California today are the ones that are unachievable to 99% of us. I'm thinking of Miley Cyrus and her excellent song Malibu. Great imagery, but how many normal people can afford to set up a home and a life in Malibu? It's out of reach and not at all representative of California today. The songs that still can be objectively viewed as typical of California, they're the darker ones. Johnny Cash, who we discussed a bit last episode with his Folsom Prison Blues, or the Red Hot Chili Peppers telling stories of how people get eaten alive on California streets with songs like Danny California. What you realize is that California used to be presented by the songbook poet, actor, as the place to get to. Think of Led Zeppelin's Going to California. Yet today, the reality is that California has become a place to escape from. With everything that awesome place had going for it, how in the world did they ruin it? Well, as I have warned you for years now, never, ever underestimate the capacity of the left to destroy. And Exhibit A is California. It's been great spending this time with you. I hope you have a great coming week. Talk to you soon.